Just kidding. I'd like to know what the parameters are of here. Basically, there's one item on the agenda. It was about 17. Are we only allowed to make one comment for 3 minutes over the whole item at the end, or do we?
I don't see that. If you have a comment on a particular item that's on here, I think you should feel free to make it.
Okay, and we don't have to wait till that.
No.
Okay, thank you.
You'll forget item two before we get to item whatever it is on the back here.
Okay, thank you.
Not a problem. Item two, staff report. Eric.
All right, we'll start off with the 15066 Fuente de Paz water intrusion. This has kind of been an ongoing issue for the resident there, so we did a little more research after the last board meeting. There was some discussion over that, so in there are some attachments. The first one, the cause and origin report, this is a direct report that comes from the property owner themselves. You can kind of skim through that. There are basically an assertion of what's going on and what's taking place in the home, so it does discuss that there's intrusion. It does discuss that the most likely cause is groundwater intrusion, and there's an assertion there that it's coming from the nearby lake. There's no actual factual data to tie that assertion other than just observation. There's no water quality data or anything like that. The following attachment after that, which this one's quite extensive, is actually two images, and these images come directly from our GIS system. So this is the first image here of the property, and you can see here that what this is our GIS base. So this is the appurtenances, which would be the easements and right of way and all the infrastructure that we own close to that property. In front, the blue line in the street is actually the water main service connection. That 8-inch AC pipe that you see sitting off to the right of the residence, there is in their property, that is probably the easement that's on the property. That is a drainage line that comes through the area. So that comes directly through the street and then goes down the slope of that hillside and down towards, and you can actually see it kind of crosses over the drainage creek that's down below. And there's also the orange connection that's kind of shown there next to OF-23 and MH-158. That's a direct connection to that pond itself, to that detention basin there, which is referred to as a lake. That connection is would allow that to be drained if necessary. That goes under the roadway. I believe the roadway is actually built to be intended to be somewhat of like a levee, if you will, and that's why it sits higher than the elevation of the water. The water that would be in that lake would want to move out the sides and down the bottom of that area, just naturally occurring based off seepage. The groundwater intrusion is not only seen at this property, but it's seen at the properties at higher elevations above it. And I believe what's going on is more groundwater intrusion in that whole area is coming down through that property because that property sits at the lowest elevation as it goes down towards that drainage channel below it. The groundwater intrusion basically is based off of just elevation in the area. Most of the groundwater can be found at about 2 or 3 feet of depth. And so this property isn't seeing something that's abnormal to that area. It's seeing that something that's pretty common. Most of the homes up there have existing sump infrastructure to pump any groundwater intrusion and keep it from getting towards the foundation of the home or percolating up through the home. Other than that, we also pulled water quality data. So we had Travis go out and meet with the property owner. He collected samples from the lake itself, from their spigot, and then also two that were from where the water is actually intruding and coming out. And the reason we did that is to look at the water quality data to see if it matched what was in the lake or if it was different from those sources. It's vastly different from the water we deliver, so that means there's most likely not any leaks that are in that area that are coming from our potable water system. If it was, we would see numbers closer in total dissolved solids than what we see. The numbers that we saw were about 60 for hardness. The overall hardness coming out of the home was closer to like 140. And the pH was was different. There was 6.96 is what we were delivering in the system, and the pH was about 6.7. And the water also in the lake did not match the water that was coming up in the home. It was closer in similarity from total dissolved solid standpoint, but the pH was still vastly different. The pH in the lake was about 6.94, and the home was about 6.70. So it doesn't appear that the water is being caused by that. Any groundwater in that area, of course, would be impacted by that reservoir or that storage basin, because there is seepage that occurs. All of that, though, would have to be at a lower elevation than any of the lake itself. And those numbers we don't have. We would have to have a survey done to see exactly where the intrusion occurs on the property, and then also the lake itself, basically like having a bathymetric to see where exactly that could be occurring from.
Let me ask you, just so I understand, if I'm standing with my back to the house and I'm looking across the street to Lake Guadalupe, are you saying in the groundwater you're talking about, is that, if this is Lake Guadalupe, is that water coming from up here, the groundwater?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. It does come from higher elevations, and then also that the lake itself would have an impact, but there's groundwater that can be found throughout the area. If you dig about 2 or 3 feet deep down into the ground, you will have groundwater. And that basically is shown in any of the work that utilities does here. And that is one of the issues for us, is during the winter, of course, that table typically rises. And if you've had wet years, the table can be impacted and rise as well. But it isn't like people think. It's not like a static level that would run through one elevation. It would follow the undulations as well through the properties. And that's why homeowners at higher elevations are seeing the same and as much influx as this one at the lower elevation is. That wouldn't be possible from the lake itself, because the lake itself, with the pressure on it, everything would want to follow hydraulics and move down into the ground. It can move slightly out, but it most commonly wants to follow that least path, which is down into the ground.
So with the water that's in the lake, are you confident that drainage easement that's across the street there, next to the house, are we confident that the water completely from Guadalupe is using that culvert and drainage ditch to move away, or is any of that backing up towards the house?
No, because the drainage ditch is way down in the canyon.
Yeah, right.
The one that's on the property is actually drainage kind of through that area, and it would be the same. It would want to follow the slope of that hill. And the way that you could see that if there was any leak, which is common for us to look as during the summer, you would see greenery, meaning there would be green grass where they hadn't been watering or anything like that. Even in my first visits out there during October, there was nothing like that. There was no wet spots on the ground. There was no greenery, shrubbery, things that kind of stood out as a potential leak even. There isn't any of that. Where there is no irrigation, it was dead.
So then those houses that would be up the hill again, if my back is to it and I'm looking up, there's no evidence of intrusion up there that you know about, or there is?
There is. So they have sumps directly built into them.
They have sump pumps and
yes.
Traps.
Yes.
Traps to take the water away.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that may be caused by the style of home. They do have multi-level homes with basements, and so they've built further into the side of that hill, causing some of that intrusion to somewhat naturally happen. I think the other homes were built with ways to try to prevent and protect that, where this property doesn't seem to have that. I think that's what's been causing some of the problems they experience. But they do experience it even at a higher elevation, and it may be a slightly lower rate, which would also be somewhat what you would expect, meaning the pressure as you go down would get higher and higher because the groundwater basically would be at a different elevation but under more pressure. And so a lower property could see the same amount, a larger amount of intrusion. And we've been to the home numerous times. I think the original times they went, they pulled the flow meter data from the water meter because they felt that there possibly could be like some small type of a leak going on. And the homeowner did have someone come out and check, and there wasn't a leak going on. But when we do look at that flow meter, the flow meter data really never stops, which is unusual. Most homes during the night would see times where there is zero flow. It does go down to where it's very low flow, but I would probably ask that they maybe check their toilets to make sure that the plungers themselves are seating. That would just be a cost savings for the homeowner that has nothing to do with a leak or intrusion. But just from the point of us doing our due diligence and looking, they possibly may have like a small flapper type leak going on.
Okay. Randy, questions?
Nope. I get it.
So, what do we do?
You know, I hate to say it, in all honesty, this isn't our liability. And for us to step in as a CSD and start to go further and work on a person's private property puts us in a very liable position, meaning we would then be responsible for any homeowner's damage throughout any of the area that they ascertain to be groundwater intrusion.
Okay.
I think we can be as helpful as possible to the resident there, and do our due diligence. And if there's, you know, if there's more they want us to do, or they have some surveys done, or but I don't think we can actually do any physical work on the property itself, meaning we can't have our staff, you know, help do trenching or anything like that.
Okay.
Because it just puts us in that position for any of the other homeowners throughout the district.
Okay. Questions?
I do have a public comment, sir.
This is 5 gallons of water. When I contact...
Wait, can you introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, I'm Nicole Romeo. Thank you all for listening this morning. I've been in contact with CSD for several months and went to the board a few weeks ago because I felt like they were trying, but the information I was being provided wasn't enough. So I'm going to read a few things. The report that I got, that he showed, that's where I got the assertion that there was lake water. The information I'm going to read, I'm just going to read it out just so you have my background a little bit. Appreciate the reports and the efforts to fix this, and I've gotten a copy of the report, but I can't come to the same conclusion that what took place in September and October of 2024 is ongoing is simply groundwater. The report shows me that potable water was ruled out. The water test for the grounds for the current conclusion was collected on December 26th. That was 10 weeks after 300 gallons a day of water were gushing into my home. This is a 5-gallon container of water. My messages to CSD said that 16 gallons of water was coming in every single hour. Additionally, we collected under my home water that had ran through 50 feet of drainage at this time on December 26th. In my opinion, it does not rule out any other water source, including seepage from the lake. I'm not a water professional, but the gushing of water at the rate of 16 to 20 gallons an hour began in about September. In addition, the water that was flowing into the French drain in my home, in my garage, was captured about 16 gallons every 1.5 hours, 300 gallons a day. The season was dry. There was no rain that had fallen in the months. What I'm hearing is that during a higher elevation and the season of the water and so forth, yeah, there should be some water coming in. And homeowners are responsible for drainage. To ensure my pipes were not broken, I enlisted the help of a plumber, 3 leak detection agencies, and a foundation specialist. During the time I contacted RMA and CSD, there were visits from RMA and CSD, which I had been advised to turn off my water for days at a time. That did not stop the water. I believe I did my due diligence as a homeowner when I hired the drainage specialist, a plumber, 3 leak detection agencies, and a foundation specialist. Here are the list of responses from CSD during the dry season while water was gushing at 300 gallons a day. Turn off the water. Your pipes are leaking. Turn on the water. Nothing is leaking. Turn off the water. I have a calendar in my car. I didn't bring it in. Your meter is running. You have seepage. Maybe there's a toilet leak, as he says. Natural sloping, groundwater, rain event. After the gushing stopped, oh, it's natural water. This is 6 weeks of 300 gallons a day. Drainage is the homeowner's responsibility. Then when Eric came out, your visit, Eric, was in November, according to my calendar, but your staff had come before. And I did speak to them about the fact that the greenery was a lot around Lake Guadalupe and the area down below my home. The greenery was super high this year, and I kept pointing at it. Every time they'd come out, I'd say, something is wrong. There's a lot of greenery down there. We can test the water. This now, after emails, it says when Eric came out, I think it was either the 13th or the 14th of November. This is 10 weeks after the gallons had stopped. We don't see any standing water outside. I see you're putting in drainage. That's good. It's going to help. You need an engineer, I got by email. December 26, knock, 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 day after Christmas. 10 weeks after the gushing has stopped, but seepage is still going on. We can test the water outside. After it's ran through the new drainage that you put in, it's no longer gushing inside, so you can't really tell the original happening of what happened with that 300 gallons a day. You're on a downward slope. You're going to have runoff. I think your foundation is cracked, is the email I got this weekend. The foundation specialist report was sent back in August and September that there is no crack in my foundation. You should have some installed gutters to drain water away from your home. Now you should check your toilets. I'm here because there were 300 gallons of water for 6 weeks during the dry season, and I'm being told about rain events, drains, and gutters. I appreciate the concern, but none of these responses address the matter of 300 gallons of water gushing into my home and other water issues in the neighborhood. None of these responses have isolated a cause for the amount of water that flowed then and the amount that is still present now, not only in my home, but other homes. None of these tell me what, if anything at all, was looked at outside my property line. I call to the attention the potential threat of the digging and building that continues on Puerto. All my neighbors along Puerto have now been told to put in sump pumps. When I talked to someone about putting into a sump pump in my house, he said two things. You may have foundation issues in the next 5 to 10 years if you put a sump pump in. You may want to put in drainage instead. So I did. I spent the thousands of dollars. I also, in my letter, said that there's building and digging continuing that week that things started on Puerto. I don't know if anyone talked to the builders. This could be an undiscovered disruption of the water tables or aquifers that are being trenched during that time. The builder may have some answers, if consulted at all. It could be the age of the conduits that are going to be tapped to provide more drainage for newer homes as they are built. I have no access to the numerous activities and actions that are happening daily in our community. I need this committee's help, and that's why I'm here this morning. This water, as Eric has said, has impacted other homeowners where sump pump solution only pushed the water out on those same dry summer days. We've had no rain. My neighbor on the corner, and it's in the emails that I sent to CSD, that sump pump was running, just running. She was told she was watering too much. She stopped the watering. Sump pump continued running water between the house, and there was heavy equipment during that time to fix something behind the house on Puerto and Fuente de Paz that leads right down to Lake Guadalupe. None of the CSD visits, responses, or the water tests address the concerns I raise about my property line, that outside of my property lines. There is also flags sitting between 6508 and 6514. Rio Blanca, downhill from me, where water is leaking out. My neighbor had to spend thousands of dollars to create a moat around his house.
Well, hold, okay, and I think I get the picture with your diligence. Okay, and I have common problems because I've had a sump pump since 1986.
Yes.
Okay, and I will tell you that mine, particularly above the house below me, runs in heavy rains. And I have spent years trapping it on the outside of the house and taking it away. Down below me, there is a house, two houses down, okay, with two sump pumps, one on each end of the house. And those run consistently in the summer. And it's coming the same way, okay? But it is groundwater.
Yes.
And I think Eric has pretty much illustrated that it's coming not out of Lake Guadalupe, but it's coming from above you. And I don't know where we, as Eric pointed out, I don't know where we could go with that.
Okay, so I'm at a dead end, as you are. The report that he pulled up here, it said the temperature in Lake Guadalupe was exactly the temperature of the water coming into my home. It also told me, different from what he's saying, that the elevation of Lake Guadalupe is higher than my home. This bariatric survey that he is talking about, these are the kinds of conversations I was willing to have back in September and October when I'm asking these questions, because if I needed to pay to have somebody survey something other than turn off your water, turn on your water, you're higher and lower,
okay,
that would have been okay. So what I'm, go ahead, I'm sorry.
We're just at a point here. I don't, and Eric has already offered whatever assistance we can provide. The water temperature in Lake Guadalupe, which is primarily filled by drainage, is going to be equal to the water that's coming down. At least unscientifically to me, it seems it would be the same. I don't get the relevance of that part of it. But
it was different from the water in my yard and different from the potable water when they did that conversation.
Yeah, and I think Eric's done a really good job of explaining the different categories of water and which ones you're experiencing, and it's not coming out of Lake Guadalupe, just like my house. It's coming from up above you,
okay,
and it's coming down when it rains.
How can we then explain the 300 gallons of water that were gushing? If we don't look outside of my home, if they're going to visit me 5 times and tell me you're natural sloping, but there's 300 gallons of groundwater. Imagine you're in your house. Your sump pump's working. Suddenly, your sump pump is gushing 300 gallons of water a day versus
in,
what
in,
it...
In a major event, the one under my house, which has a 5-gallon bucket in there, will run consistently.
Absolutely. That's expected.
Okay.
But in the middle of August, when there's no rain and we're in the middle of a drought, this seems like an event, not a situation.
Go ahead, Aaron.
So what you're saying to people in the industry, really you're saying two different things. The water that's coming up from groundwater intrusion would be the same from a rain event as it would from a non-rain event. The rain events really pertain much more to drainage and natural sloping than they do groundwater itself, other than the fact that during a large rain event, it takes longer for that same amount of water to precipitate and move its way to drainage, and that's where sloping and things like that can be critical. At a non-time event, the problem is it could be added from pools in the area. There could be a crack. There's a lot of stuff that could be going on.
I agree.
But the problem is none of that is the responsibility of this entity. And we can't come onto your property and even do work on it because of the fact of where our connections end and where your responsibility as a property owner begins. And so that's what makes it very difficult to kind of explain this to you, because I know that you're not hearing what you want to hear. And it's also difficult
Excuse
for
me.
Us.
I'm sorry.
Well, what I mean is it's difficult for us also to relay that information. We've been trying very much to help you.
If you read your emails to me, your email started with, it's groundwater, drainage is the responsibility.
You know, I'm sorry. At this point,
can we have a meeting?
No, I'm sorry. I apologize. But, I mean, we've given you ample time to explain it, and we can continue this in a one-on-one atmosphere.
I would like that.
We've got 14 more items here we've got to get through, and another meeting behind this one.
Can I ask for a meeting? I'd like to meet with Eric. I'd also like Travis and Rob from RMA, and then the butler, who is familiar with groundwater issues throughout the entity, to attend a meeting with me, and I can send an email and request that. Because I think there's more here than... You know, so sad, too bad, homeowners. You're just going to have to deal with water. I think there's more going on.
Are you amenable to a meeting?
Yeah. Are you? Thank you. I will reach out to your office for that.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for your time and your patience with what I had to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
bathymetric study, Lake Clementia. This could be quick and easy. You're doing work on it, right?
Yes, correct. So we've received one quote currently. I believe the current quote is around $11,500 to have it done. I believe it's from REY. There's also another quote for services that should be forthcoming here really soon. That was they provided information, was provided by WSC, a firm that does a lot of this type of work on urban water management plans. They gave us a firm's name. That firm is preparing a quote as well. So this is super. It'll be coming real quick.
Yeah. It's based just on that too. We're way ahead of the game in what we paid for the last two.
Good.
Okay. Emergency water supply 1 year. Randy, if you have to leave early, is there anything on here on this agenda that you want to address first?
I'll hang.
You're okay.
How this goes.
Okay. A 1 year water supply. Part of the only comment I have with this is at some point, and this ties into whatever we're going to call this, a technical review or a peer review or whatever, is that you can't really project out what the impact of our water supply is in our reservoirs and the impact of what conservation will be if you don't have a standard. Part of what they did in the analysis they presented at the Country Club, which was Atkins, was tell us that we had we should be digging somewhere between 1, 3, and 5 wells, okay? And that was going to yield, when I started doing the math, that was going to, over a month period of time, was going to be 200 to 300 acre feet of water, which wasn't making a lot of sense to me to support a community in an emergency situation for 6,000 people. So if we, as a board, I think it's something that we have to establish, unless you tell me otherwise, that until we understand what that safe level is, then we really can't do much more to finish this thing up.
I would somewhat agree. And I think the volumes that they're projecting, maybe from data that was existing from previous wells that had a certain bore size and certain area, and I think looking at any option for water is going to be, you know, kind of at the board's direction, because that is the reality of just, you know, diversifying the portfolio of water that we have. How that happens and the mechanisms that it gets done in are going to be more of a long-term, I would say, CIP-type program. But definitely with wells that would be projected to provide that much water would be very, very small at best. I think there's other options, and I wouldn't even refer to it really as an emergency supply. I would start to look at this supply much more as a augmentation supply. An emergency supply, realistically, would be much more like trucking in water, in my opinion.
Well, he made a point in this chapter 7 of the water plan that the wells specifically he was addressing were not augmentation; they were an emergency supply. Yeah. So we're going to have to come to some understanding of what that is. Maybe it's not that we drill a well and we really find out what it produces.
Yeah, so usually you would drill a test well, you would find out the safe yield and then also water quality doing that test well. The test wells can range upwards of over $100,000 to do that type of work. But definitely I think the previous projections for wanting an emergency supply had much more to do with somebody else owning the property and basically trying to sell the district water. And I would strongly advise against that approach.
Yeah. I was here in 2016 when we looked at the easement and the agreement, and it was at that point in time that the board essentially turned its back on the specific wells that we were talking about.
So what I have added in is just the cost because of this emergency water supply discussion. Clementia is part of that. So what we have added as an attachment is basically the cost for services from the lab to start doing Title 22 required type testing so we can see the water quality in there. That's just for discussion and for the board's information. And then also when we start to do this so that we know the cost impact of doing it, the frequency that we would want it done. And then we can start to get an idea, because this information will be relevant if we ever approach the state to use that as a drinking source.
Right. So essentially we've moved onto this test well site selection guidelines. Are you there with it, or do you have more to add on that? We can jump over an item if you're done.
Yeah, we can discuss it. So, you know, the areas that I would say for testing would be areas that we own property. We do know that there's property possibly looking at up for sale. That property would be very beneficial to the district because there's already appurtenances that are ponds and lakes. Those ponds and lakes could act as a recharge system because any type of extraction, we'll say, we don't have to use the word well, but any extraction that we take from the groundwater table, we're going to be expected as a district to replace that. That is the state's current standard. And right now there's large grant funding opportunities for this possibility, this exact reason. The state is actively looking for areas to do groundwater recharge. A lot of the state has become impervious due to development. And so they're looking for entities to be able to put water into the ground. That water doesn't necessarily stay, like most people think, in there, basically like putting it in a bottle and being able to take that same exact water out. But what it does is feed into an aquifer across the whole area, whole zone. So everybody, even non-district people, would benefit from this activity. And then during dry years, you would use an accounting mechanism just similar to a regular bank account to do extractions. And what it does is provide that source and also protects your wells and gives them a longer life. But even the people around you, it improves the groundwater wells that they have because the groundwater would start to rise. There are some opportunities with the land that I think the district should be interested in because there's already appurtenances there to deliver that water to the reservoirs.
So these ponds that are out there, they have, like, have golf balls in them? Is that what
they do? Okay. Yeah. So it is honestly the golf course property. I mean, the reason
I couldn't come up with any other ponds.
That's, yeah. Well, I call them ponds. Ponds, lakes. Lakes are truly different things. And reservoirs are as well, but these are perfect for doing some of that groundwater recharge, and they've already been doing it just without any accounting mechanism. So any water going in there, of course, impacts the groundwater tables. Usually at that type, they look for impervious areas, but even there's a prime example just on the other side of the river in the new homes there by that commercial property where there's a large stormwater detention basin. A lot of times you'll see those used by entities. We put in treated water, removing the chlorine, let it sink and perk into the ground. That's exactly how groundwater recharge works. And so in this instance, all of those appurtenances that exist to transfer tertiary water to irrigate the golf courses could also use those same appurtenances with a small connection to actually deliver water out to our drinking water reservoirs where we already have a drinking water treatment plant. And so the cost for ever needing treatment for wells kind of goes away. And so does the water quality type issue where building a municipal well can be a lot more expensive than irrigation. And in that avenue, if it's a possibility, those irrigation wells could provide enough water for Stonehouse, for the villages, for basically everybody to move on to Purple Pipe as we move forward.
So have you, or you should, talk to the Ochi Hartnell guys?
So we've been working with the Slough House. Slough House is the groundwater
right.
Sustainable agency. And yeah. So we've had very limited discussion with them. I believe at the time I was going to try to talk to them was one of their board meetings. I had a secondary meeting at the same exact time. They're very excited about this opportunity because it also helps us perfect our water right, but it improves their water quality. It would impact even into Wilton and those areas when you start doing large-scale groundwater recharge like that.
One of the benefits that you have in anything that you do to utilize groundwater is one of the recommendations, one of the mitigations that they supported in the Integrated Water Master Plan was the using that old 1954 permit to go into the river in the middle of the summertime, take that water out, use that water on the golf course, raw water on the golf course, and then in turn take the recycled water and drive it over to Village A, B, and C to irrigate property. That doesn't work for a variety of reasons. And one of the things it doesn't work for is you're going to get holy hell down below in the river in the middle of the summer if you start drawing water out, because they use a combination of that river water and wells down there. And more and more, as that river trickles in the summertime, there's more and more pressure on the use of their wells. So there may be an avenue of discussion there. You might want to try and
talk to them. Actually really excited. I think originally they had possibly approached us in conversation about a 2-for-1 type. We give them twice, and then in dry years we can withdraw half. I think in this instance it actually works out a lot better, because what we put in the ground we're then entitled to as a 1-for-1 draw.
Yeah.
And their resistance or reluctance to this, I think, would be easily manageable, because most of the groundwater basin authorities, it's basically just a direct accounting mechanism, meaning if you're putting in the ground, you know, X, then you're entitled to take out X during dry years. And so that's kind of what the state has been looking at. And so it's not a hard thing to even do. I think for us, what it would require at some point would be eliciting a company to draw that up in language that the state and the Groundwater Basin Authority could review. And then it would be kind of a done deal, if you will.
Okay.
So I have a few questions. Back to testing the water in Clementia. Are we starting the process, or do you need something from the board to get started on that? Or where are we at?
I've been waiting for board direction to do it. Typically, what I would recommend during this time of the year would be, if the water is staying about the same, would be doing like monthly samples, just for background information. They would be bacteriologically driven, and also TOC, which is total organic carbon, that drives a lot of treatment type issues. During the summer, I think it would, because that would be most likely when we would use that water if necessary, we would probably want to do more frequent testing. But this is really just a directional item.
So is this something that needs to move to the board for approval, or can we just...
If I was looking
to get going on it.
It's not clear to me from this list of tests whether all of them are needed, Eric.
No, it wouldn't be all of them. This is basically all Title 22, so some of the items that are in there, like THM and stuff, wouldn't be done. We would be seeing a much pared-down list of possibly 4 to 5 samples, and I can give a more, like a solid number on it, but it falls under our authority level.
Under the spending
authority. Yeah, I was going to say, when you look cost by cost, they weren't very expensive. There was one on there that was $1,000, so I'm not sure which one that was.
And that one, I think, may be a little more frequent at first. So Cryptosporidium and Giardia are going to be the ones that they're going to most actively want to see. The water treatment processes will take care of all of that. This is much more just an act of what's required by the state. We've had this conversation, I think, quite a few times internally with staff. If people aren't aware, every state water reservoir is permitted for public contact and potable water use. Folsom and Redding, Shasta, all of the ones that are DWR controlled, all have that. And so it's really an antiquated rule that ties back to the lack of real water treatment guidance. And water treatment guidance has come so far forward that rule really should be re-looked at by the health code, because it's two different groups that are controlling that.
Yeah, okay.
So back to... What do we need to do to get them started on this process, on the testing?
I think what we're looking for is just sort of informing the board about this procedure and going forward with it. I think Eric has probably included this because of the prior objections, I would say, to use of Clementia. So just to have it be fully transparent that staff... can proceed with these tests in order to determine, you know, what would be needed in order to make Clementia be available as an emergency water supply. And so I think it's mostly informational, and to see if, you know, there are any major objections.
We're going forward. That's what I want.
Yeah, and to be clear with that, the water quality guys at the water board are going to tell you that it's you're not at the point, even though you're swimming in Folsom, that you're going to be swimming in Clementia. And I don't agree that, you know, if you go up to Alpine off 4 there, you can swim in that lake, and it's not much bigger than Lake Clementia. But at the moment, they're telling us you need legislative action. And I'm not sure which is quicker or which would be more advantageous to us, but you can either try and change the legislation or you can go through the process and hope somebody approves it. That's pretty much where you got to go.
Yeah, and the process itself so you have to have a bathymetric, and sometimes you have to have water age studies based off water age movement where you start to draw that water from. So there may be ongoing stuff. The legislative process may be even arduous, and I would say never hurts to try both, meaning I'm one of those that you kind of, you just go after both avenues and see where it ends up. From a cost perspective, there's some cost associated to it, but they're going to want the same data. Even if you go through a legislative process, you're still going to have that water quality data.
What about the process of testing the water through our water plant, treating the water and see what, are they going to require you to test?
No, because the water plant having membranes is probably one of the most robust systems there is. I think this is much more just what's required by the health code to kind of get State Water Resources Control Board to alleviate the concern from the health department itself. And that's why the two entities are just two different groups. And I think State Water Resources Control Board is going to be a lot easier to deal with than probably the health board, because the health board doesn't see this all the time.
Right. Okay.
So on to the next thing you were talking about, as I understand it, surcharging the groundwater could be done through properties inside of the CSD area, which you're saying the obvious spot is the golf courses. So that confuses me a little bit. Right now, obviously, there's seepage. Let's take Bass Lake. And we pump water in, reclaimed water into Bass Lake for the golf course to use, and that is seeping. Part of that is seeping into the groundwater. Two things: it's reclaimed water. Does that matter? And the second thing, I guess, is natural seepage. How much do you really get out of that? Is there a way of drilling something to get that water down into the groundwater? What are we talking about here?
Those are great questions. Natural seepage, typically when you would do this, you would look for places that the water seeps quickly, meaning you have people come out with LIDAR, scan the ground, and they look for like gravel type associated understructure that's just naturally occurring. Those percolate faster. But because the state has been active in this, you're exactly right. There are avenues and other mechanisms, and one of them is they drive poles into the ground, and what that does is allow the water to move down through the groundwater table faster. I'm assuming that the current ponds were probably selected because they don't perk real well, meaning they had naturally standing water, so they wouldn't be ideal locations, but I think there's ways that we could get them to work a little better in that essence. Without owning them, I think the difficulty has been in then who controls it, maintains it. Also, there are requirements, meaning what you put in there you have to track as being truly seepage, so you have to have a mechanism to do that. So you need usually a flow meter going out so you can see what you pump out and then what's lost. So you need some type of measuring device, whether it's a staff gauge or instruments that measure the elevation to give you a volume. The question about tertiary water, that's a great question. So right now, Orange County and quite a bit of LA is using this as a mechanism to push salt water and keep it at bay, but they're also counting it as recharge, and I think they opened up the avenue that tertiary water can be counted as groundwater recharge.
And so then what that leads me to is the juice worth the squeeze? Or is there enough capacity here to make a difference, or are we just nibbling at the edges of the problem.
So currently with our current water right, we use about 2,000 acre feet. The total allotted volume is closer to 6,600 acre feet.
6,350.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit that we could put in the ground. And meaning in dry years, if you took that and put it back in the reservoir itself, and there's also some looks at the reservoir I think we'll discuss in the next one about production reports. Looking at seepage even there, if we re-divert that seepage to go back into the reservoir itself, it's a large, substantial amount of water. And so it becomes very beneficial to both the district, the community, and I think it may alleviate some of our resiliency concerns.
So we're thinking about this, we're talking about it. What do we need to proceed to make this thing happen? What's the next step?
So currently, RWA, the Regional Water Authority, has put out a request to its...
They're collective, but they have not yet done a survey. They're planning to release a survey today. This is to gauge kind of the interest in the region in projects that would recharge groundwater. That Prop 4 was passed at the November election, and that bond funding included almost $400 million in state resources for groundwater recharge. And RWA was very involved in the inclusion of the groundwater recharge in the bond initiative. And so they are very eager to get all of their regional affiliates to determine whether or not they would be interested in this funding opportunity. So that's the next step. We're probably looking at 6 months before the NOFA is released, but I think there's intent and desire to have it be, have the funding be made available, put out to the grantees prior to Newsom's departure from office. So you're looking at probably a year and a half, 2 years. So,
that sounds really promising, and I'm excited about that. The whole idea, especially with funding possibly available for it. This might be a godsend for us. So, there is another question that's kind of a sidebar to this that I wanted to ask this morning at some point, and I'm going to go ahead and ask it now. The golf course, you said, might be a problem because we don't own the property. The golf course owns the property, or whatever ponds aren't owned by us. In my experience, that's not going to be a problem. When we look at this water situation, everybody's gonna want to chip in to solve the problem. But what occurred to me reading the president's message from the country club the other day, talking about there's a real possibility of shutting down one golf course, and there's always the possibility that something happens that sends the country club into bankruptcy and they just shut down. And we've got no place to put our treated water. What do we do? Is there enough capacity over here in Van Vleck to get rid of everything we need to get rid of?
So, not that I'm aware of, no. And I think the problem in those situations with somebody else, the way it currently works with the country club is that they operate and maintain those lines, meaning they basically own them. Until something happens with them, they're under their ownership. So for us to possibly own that property would be probably a lot more less problematic, in the sense that then selection sites become a lot easier, access to those sites become easier, and it also gives us all the appurtenances that already exist possibly if we were to deal that way. And it would become then under our control instead of legal agreements that could change over the years.
Yeah, but my question is a little bit different. What if tomorrow the country club announces they're going to shut down the South Golf Course and they don't want our treated wastewater? What do we do? Because this is a real possibility.
Yeah, we would have to begin looking for an NPDES permit to discharge to the river at some point when basically the property behind us where we store the tertiary water became inundated or full. And we would have to start the process long before then, meaning if that
it
takes a long time.
You're wishing on a star there, my friend.
So, I mean, you'd have to start, if they went out of business tomorrow, we'd have to start looking right away. Typically, during the winter, not a lot is pushed up to them through the reclaim system from tertiary itself. But at some point, it will fill up within a year.
Do you know how much we can get rid of to Van Vlecks?
No, I've never checked the full capacity through the irrigation, but I know that they've used that irrigation part before to be over land, spread over land. It could be something that we look into potentially, but I think...
I guess what I'm saying is you ought to start looking at that now, because there is it's not probable but possible that the golf course may cease to exist for us to get rid of our treated water. So we should start thinking about a backup plan.
So we'll do that as well.
So that's very true, and maybe Peketich and I in 2016 don't look quite as stupid now as we did to people when we recommended that we do exactly what you're talking about. We've been down this road before. I got notes of meetings with John that will go on forever, okay, and I'll give them to you. I want to back up for a minute because I want to understand in groundwater recharge when we're taking recycled water. I'm using Bass Lake as an example. We would undoubtedly want to add more water to that than we can physically hold in there now, which is, in many respects, good news. Do we have to dig a bigger hole? Do we have to dig another hole? When you say lay out groundwater for recharge, I mean, the Ochi guys have done this in the past with those fields down there where they take water off the river and push it out into those old grapevines. Is that what your idea of this concept is, or is it a hole in the ground?
It is what you're talking about. It is to use every existing stormwater detention basin that has percolation capability to percolate, and it would be that type of land spread is advantageous.
So would a golf course be giving you that opportunity if it wasn't a golf course, if you have 18 fairways out there? What you have, and the other extension of what Randy was talking about there is in his letter he mentions that, you know, it's good. It at some point, even before they go out of business or don't go out of business, it's going to cost $10 million to replace the North Course system, according to what Troon said. So if it's less directed, for example, I mean, if there are viable pipes that run through these fairways and you're not, you know, doing this to greens and this to tees and all this other stuff and you're just wildly spraying water, does that accomplish anything?
No, it has to be a large enough volume basically to be like in a pond type setup. So even if you do have to dig a hole.
Yeah.
In other words, not like a well hole, but more like a basin. So usually you need a large spread to put it. The golf courses I wouldn't envision for this at all, unless there's property associated to it that doesn't impact any of the golf course. And the wells themselves would not impact any play or any design of the golf courses, because most of it anymore is completely below ground. Almost all of it is a submersible motor and pump, and it sits almost all below ground besides the piping that comes up and attaches. And so I don't think people would even notice if there were irrigation wells. I know that the large courses in Sacramento that the city has all have irrigation and some have drinking wells associated. Bing Maloney and Hagen Oak is the other one.
Do you happen to know how big of a pond it has to be substantial, or
depends on how fast it percolates, and so some of that can be done with but even that detention basin that sits behind the homes, that's typically perfect for what I've seen done, because you can
put detention basin. You talk about Lost Lake.
No, so the new properties that exist kind of by Bel Air, when you look directly behind them, it looks like there's a gardens. Storm detention basin.
those are quite a few. That thing is quite a few acres. I
mean, yeah.
That's substantial.
That's like perfect, because you just put water in it and let it perk into the ground, and you get to count that water. And so usually the harder part for us will be our diversion rights don't really allow for any in the summer, which is usually when you best percolate.
So part of our problem here is the 200 and something days that we don't have access to the river.
Exactly, and the hope during that period is that if possible we could use these irrigation wells at times to backfeed through that system out to the reservoirs to augment them. And then we've had some discussion just on conservation and then also just some different things we may be able to do that stand outside of the Adkins report. And I can apologize for some of that. I wasn't here during it, so I don't know what ideas they were receiving, but I think there's different ideas that could be beneficial.
Yeah. So it just occurred to me what my other question was. So you take, you pound piles in and it percolates down. You got to get it back up. That's a well, right?
Yeah, and the wells can come later. I think, the largest part of the grant funding really is about recharge. And so you start that accounting mechanism the second you start this process of counting water going into the ground, that then alleviates your extraction.
But when we're talking about pulling it back out with a well, we go back to the whole scenario of wells in here and the costs of wells and so on and so forth, right?
So the cost of the wells that were projected were for municipal drinking water wells, which would also account for all of their appurtenances, meaning usually there's a building, the pump, the motor, the disinfection type system. Some of the quote also that was in the Adkins report was all about treatment. This would be basically very little of that, meaning you could get away with a tough shed with the pump down below the ground as a submersible. So total cost per well, you may be looking at, depending upon size, less than $500,000. And then you don't have huge infrastructure costs, because if you're in the golf course land, the lines are already there. They're also not in roadways, so we don't have to do any roadway digging and damage. And the connection could be very minimal, meaning you're not going far to connect it into that, which would be a large cost.
And we pump it straight to the treatment plant.
Yeah, exactly. It would go out to the reservoirs and just act as a recharge where you already have treatment, so you don't have to build treatment long term. So there's quite a bit of cost savings, I think, in there.
So back to the wells for a minute and the credit for recharge. If we recharge through these pipes in the ground in Bass Lake, hypothetically, we're still taking credit for water that we pump over here or someplace else? In other words, am I site-specific?
It's basically across the whole entire district, meaning wherever you put the groundwater in doesn't really matter as long as it's in our service area. And then wherever you extract it also doesn't matter inside that service area. It's just a straight, because the state really knows the water moves. It isn't stagnant in a zone. And I think that's what changed about groundwater was previously when they looked at it, people thought of that aquifer basically as being like a mine aquifer with just granite all around it and the water didn't move. But any water we put in here will move west. But we get to pull that water back out, even though it's not the same molecule of water. We can pull
out
the same volume.
The water in Bass Lake, just from a qualitative observation, is going to go towards the river.
Yeah, typically they'll flow a little away from the rivers because the rivers sometimes push a little bit of groundwater themselves because they have seepage along their channels. But a lot of times they're and that really, I would say, isn't a concern from our perspective because we don't. I don't want to say we don't care where the water goes. The fact is we're just putting it in so we can extract it later. And it won't be the same molecule, but it will be volume for volume. Whereas if we do like a two-for-one trade with another district, and that's usually what I've seen done, is then you're getting half the volume that you give them, which is, it's just not a great scenario.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Bob, Kyle. speaking to Rod Hart, in his opinion, RMA owns Bass Lake. CSD owns the water that's in Bass Lake.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So when you're talking about buying Bass Lake or whatever, so Rod expanded.
Or trading for it, maybe.
And they expanded that lake not too long ago. And that lake has a lot more capacity currently, but they keep it down so we don't have any spills into the river. So there is a lot more capacity in that lake existing. Just a quick question. If you, Eric, if you had a, if you were guessing today how much of a grant you'd be going for, what would that number look like?
Do you have?
I think if we're talking about a property acquisition, that should probably not be stated because of the sensitivity of negotiations for any kind of purchase. That's what I would say.
There's a couple of appraisals floating around from the last
time. But I'm talking about the recharge system, all the appurtenances, the land purchase,
I can answer that one.
Okay.
So most of the recharge itself doesn't really have a cost to it. And then also most of the appurtenances somewhat exist for diversion. There would be some slight changes that would be necessary, but I think the bulk of that, and I think that's why we're careful about this, is most of it would be property acquisition.
So would this be purchased with augmentation funds?
You're way ahead of us here.
Yeah. I think I haven't even really thought
My point is, and yes, I am far ahead, and so is the board when they're talking about raising augmentation fees.
Yeah.
So my point is, if this is a reasonable solution with a lower price tag, I would like to have it considered before we start jacking up augmentation fees. Maybe we should see what the cost of this is, including grants, before we start just arbitrarily raising augmentation fees.
Understood, yeah. And I think as far as I had gotten was OL reserves, right? The big bucket, but not any specificity about that. But yes, certainly. And that's why the Lumos group is working on, you know, coming up with a proposed water supply augmentation fee dollar amount based on realities, right? But no, I mean, I think arbitrary increases are definitely not something that anybody wants to be a part of.
Okay, that was it for me.
You know, when you talk about biggest cost being acquisition, it comes to mind Tom Schuchuk's idea that we need to get all the entities together, community entities together, and solve this problem. In my mind, if we used a golf course pond to augment or to charge the groundwater, that should be a no-coster. They ought to be on board with being part of the process. So that's one thought. Here's a dumb question. What the whole idea of charging the groundwater so we can take it back up, how is that any different than just sticking a well in the ground and pulling the water up? Why is there a banking of water? Is there something that says we can't just drill the water and pull a well and
pull Sigma, the water out? Sigma started under California, so State Water Resources.
Can you say what that acronym is? I know it's the Groundwater Act, but can you, for everybody else?
Yeah, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And typically you'll hear us refer to it as Sigma. And what that created was everybody then had to create groundwater basin authorities and then also groundwater basin agencies. And so usually there's a larger groundwater basin authority, and inside of it is multiple groundwater basin agencies. And when the state created this act under the Department of Resources, it was due to overdraw conditions, usually around agricultural areas, mm-hmm. And definitely the Central Valley, and as you head towards the Grapevine. And what it created was a management act and a requirement that you specified how you were going to manage your groundwater sustainably. And actually, there was one district that struggled to get it right for about four attempts. But you had to turn into the state this paperwork, and they had to approve your process of managing it. And so the mechanisms that we've talked about is the direct correlation of what the state expected to see. I was involved in those conversations for Stockton. And that is what's expected. What's expected is that even if you have existing current wells, that you do some type of a banking system so that you can withdraw water. And I think a lot of this pertains to areas where the state probably has a lot of voting pressure, and these people are drying up wells. And so that's a huge concern with overdraw, and that's why we even see ranchers in other areas where their wells start to founder, is because they can overdraw them. And also a well usually in the ground, if you're doing that type of activity, you shorten the lifespan of a well, because it's basically just a filter. It's not what people think, where you're punching a hole into, like, you know, through layers of dirt into this huge open cup down there. Basically, all of those layers of dirt, sand, they're all acting as a filter. Well, when the filter plugs, no more water. There could be tons of water around you, but you're not going to be able to draw it into your well anymore. And so that's what this act created. So no, for us to drill wells, we actually have to put in a plan to the groundwater authority in this area, and now they're the ones who approve it.
Yeah.
Used one, to, it was all county.
One of the advantages you have in that process is we had to make a choice here between whether we were going to join downtown and be the little fish in the big pond or vice versa. So part of that stakeholder meeting that you have, as this process were to move forward to evaluate realistically what we can and can't do, includes them. I mean, they're a big player in this.
Yeah.
They're gonna take a vote as to what you can and you can't do.
Yeah, so far in conversations, I think they're really excited, because what we put in the ground, they pretty much benefit everybody going west of us. And it also helps the people who are in unincorporated areas, and that's what the state is really most concerned about. People usually that are in agencies and districts, they're a little, because of the voting and the boards, they're usually a little more responsive, but the property owners that kind of sit along in external areas, their wells are going dry.
Right.
And the water quality of them also is of huge concern, and so that's why the state wants this groundwater recharging so bad. They want it to be very quick. And so in this situation where most of the appurtenances exist, it's a really good possibility that the grant funding could be approved, because there isn't a lot of work to be done to get it going, where a lot of other agencies haven't wanted to spend anything to get everything in place to start doing it. And that's not what the state's looking for. The state's looking for what they call like boot ready projects, meaning they'll be done within a year or two.
Right. And so what I'm assuming then is you need whatever this plan becomes, you need the plan certainly before you can go looking for a grant. I mean, you have to have something to show them, right, that shows viability. They're just not going to give you a loan and say, go build a water supply.
I think currently, because what we have in place, even if we didn't, just to do the banking itself, I think the banking is in place so we could get a grant. The funding portion, the dollar amount, is the harder portion, because, yeah, they're going to want something showing that type of, but that's about 6 months out. So this is just to get that conversation started and get the board thinking too, like, you know, if we did do property acquisition, what else could we do with the property?
Okay. Where are we? Updated drought plan. 90-2, did we miss anything?
No, so that it's in there. This is basically a conversation.
What about the
well, we have the Sacramento
as a water source.
So that one I can touch on really. So that was basically to have like a scope of work that the board gives us direction on that. This item really is an item that's like a 20-year item before that $30,000 would even be spent. We're talking probably at least 10 years. So I don't think there's a ton of direction that needs to be made, because I think currently this is much more like a long-term type planning that needs to not really fall off anybody's plate, but that there isn't going to be any money spent because there would be huge hurdles to overcome first. We would have to look at changing some of our water right. They would have to look at changing some of their water right. We would also have to look then past that even. They would have to update their water master plan to include providing water outside
the district. I looked at their urban water plan, and there are people stacked up waiting for that water in that plot that's adjacent to Grantline and Sunrise that just never ends. It goes all the way to Wagel's property down on Sunrise Boulevard. So if you're in line, you're going to be in line for a long time.
Yeah, and we were told in our conversations with them that the full build out for the North Service, which is this is the North Service area attachment, has been, even when I was working there, that they were in conversation to complete that. It comes and goes away. Because it's, and for them, they've even told us it's a 10 to 15 year project to do it because of the size of the lines and also the size of the storage capacity, because they're looking at like a 15 to 20 million gallon storage out near Anatolia with large lines feeding out there. And so I think this really isn't something that's, and I would say as we look for water, this is probably, as people move closer, we just keep revisiting it and retouching it, but this isn't a viable current avenue.
Okay. Back to H, 90-2.
Yeah, so this is to kind of look at the drought plan and what was in place. We'll let Amelia get there.
So this is the original plan.
Yeah, so this is the district's original plan for water shortage contingency. I believe it was done back in 2012. There have been some edits and revisions, but I don't think anything has ever been approved by the board. But I think this is kind of an educational, discussional piece that we need to start to look at, fine-tune, clean it up a little. Some of the pieces, so if we look at the numbers that are looked for in conservation, typically most places don't state from like 1% to another. They usually just give a hard 10%,
yeah.
20%.
And where you were locked into the 50% number in there is in the acquisition and services agreement that formed the CSD. Part of that negotiation required that to be in there. That agreement has expired. So you are free to explore other areas to do what you want to do to take us off that mandatory 50% reduction.
Yeah, I think so. What I've seen pretty commonly in the state with the urban water management plans is that's pretty much usually stage one is drought, conservation is a way of life. Usually stage two is 10 and 20, and it works its way up to 50. I think it's pretty common for everybody, even if they're not going to have to enforce that because they have a good enough or a substantial water
right.
like Sacramento.
Right.
They still have that same contingency type planning. I think what we need to start to look at is cleaning it up, making it make more sense, and then also enforcement.
Part of what my concern has been all along with the 50% is not understanding that we might have to go there. Certainly if you get a drought the magnitude of 77, 78, and 79, by the middle of 78, you're going to be at 50%, and you're probably going to be trucking in water, unless magic occurs and all of a sudden we have this unlimited supply of water. Okay, what I was objecting to was the fact that when you looked specifically at the 2016 water supply assessment, that thing becomes a planning tool for building more houses. Okay, it's not a planning tool. It's a conservation tool. Okay, so you know, that's when you look at what's in Atkins' report, and then you look at our water supply over the last season, we start in June at unrestricted, and by the end of the 5-month period, even though we have water coming down the river and we're fine, well, we actually didn't have water until December, but when we got there, we were at a stage, according to the plan, we were at a stage 5 water emergency.
Yeah, so originally, in part of this, and Mimi can speak to it, because her and I did a lot of research on this, in further ones that were I don't want to say they were even presented, but in our documentation that we have, there were ones that told us specific dates to look at where those contingencies trigger based off the reservoirs. And some of those weren't even to be triggered until like April of the next year. And so to look at it like November and December and say that we're in a stage five could be reality based off the elevation, but those I think are the items that we need to identify and say, when are we going to trigger into that?
Exactly.
Because before, I don't think it was ever solidified that we were actually going to use those proposed dates. Some of them were as of like April, and a lot of it was projection based, where I would caution, we already know the risk, right? And that's part of why we're talking about augmentation so heavily, or even supply. And so the risk is really there, and so I think we need to roll back possibly some of those dates and use a more protective approach to the water supply.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, physical. You explained this to me the other day. When we did the bathymetrics, my next question was, when Travis does his analysis at the end of each month, what is it that we actually do? And you can take 1 minute to explain that if you want to. I'm satisfied with what we do. I just wasn't at all sure. I mean, did we take a pair of binoculars out there and say, yeah, we got about 50%, but
yeah. So they take weekly readings. Some of the readings, because of the way they were written, the weekly readings, some of them, because of Department of Water Resources, are done on staff gauges, and so some of them are done by visual line of sight. But we do have instruments that we use as well. And so I believe about a year ago or 2 years ago, Travis and the group purchased stuff from WildEye, and that's the invoice that we have here. And this is data collection type software. I believe it also gives the staff the ability to view this on the web through our own login. And basically what it is it gives an elevation reading. The elevation then, because of the surveys, drives volume. And so we have data every week that they collect that gives us the volumes of the reservoirs. Plus we have flow meters for what we're putting in. We also track all the seepage, and that's part of that monthly production inventory report. We also track evaporation and rain, because all of those typically would be either subtracted or added to your water right, based on which they're doing.
Okay.
So, but that's the gist of this process. It isn't just kind of like a guessing type thing. It's a very accurate depiction of what's going on.
Okay. Jay, draft integrated water master plan peer/technical review.
So this was to get input from both the committee and the board, because that was kind of the last conversation we had with the board, is they wanted to look at the scope of work. So attached was the original scope of work that was put out to a few firms. We did have one firm respond, which was WSC. They've done the city of Folsom, and they've been involved in a couple other urban water management plans. Their quote was pretty very cost effective.
It was cost effective. My question was, when I looked at it, I said, what are they just going to check the arithmetic? I mean,
no,
it was like $4,000 or something.
So
$5,000.
They will check the arithmetic. They feel that the arithmetic done by the person who did the arithmetic side, their work is usually very good. And so they were more working on a plan basically for the board and for us to be able to follow long-term type planning situations and scenarios, but they were to review the whole thing. Their scope, they just felt that they wouldn't have to spend a lot of time on one portion of it, and a lot of it would be dedicated to the other. And they've done a couple reviews. And so it's more up to the committee and then at the board level during a discussion there, whether they want to proceed with that or if they want to add to it.
Well, my question is, you know, that essentially there are four suggested alternatives for mitigation in the report, and the last of which is extensive conservation. We haven't, and I think it ties back into that emergency supply and agreeing what is the prudent approach for the district to take. Beyond that, we don't have a result. I was really excited to see those guys bid, because I told you how I had begged Michael to at least go back and talk to these folks after there were no other bidders. They looked on their website to be really together. I read the entire Folsom plan, and the work was exemplary. You're off to a great start, in my opinion, by the fact that they're in the game. But I don't know, I'm really trying to understand what it is we're going to evaluate. When you look at the Folsom plan, it gives you the plan. You have alternatives. We have, you know, take water, raw water out of the river and put it on the golf course. Take water and drive it over to Village A, B, and C. We have used Clementia. We have all of these things that contain significant obstacles that we don't even know, in most cases, either whether they work or how long it will take to get the necessary permitting, for example, on Clementia, to make that part of the reality. So I'm not recommending anything. I'm just asking, at what point do we really want to spend money to review something? Do we want to do it when we're closer to being finished, or do we want to do it now? I'm asking you. I don't have any idea.
I think it would behoove us to probably spend it now, because I think they would give us a very good plan. And that was the conversation that I had with them, is that we had concerns over the plan itself. The projections and the numbers seem to be pretty accurate from one standpoint.
Yeah, and anything that I've done to this point, whether it be in evaluating Clementia or evaluating how much water we have left over or anything else, I've just arbitrarily used Lisa's numbers. I haven't, you know, there have been lots of numbers through this process that have been contested, and I ignored that. I used the data that she presented to draw what I believe are my own personal conclusions as to where we're going here. So that part of it I'm fine with. What I'm trying to understand is, what is the most efficient, realistic way to approach the problem now that we see, and are there, and you're already recommending other mitigations that are not included in the report. So,
yeah, I don't. So part of the hard part for me was I wasn't involved in the process, right? And so I came in, and even seeing it, seeing what's recommended is like loose recommendations. It isn't like a plan to follow forward. It isn't a strong. And I think in conversations with the people who I elicited for firms to do this type of work, were agencies who do this commonly, and that their plans are solid. And I think doing that, we could get a much better plan and also have these conversations that are currently different probably than maybe what was relayed to Adkins or not relayed, because I haven't seen any real communication back and forth with them in the past.
Yeah.
And so I think that process could take a while, because there are definitely different viable options, and we may be looking at different dollar amounts and also implementation and staging of those phases, meaning if we go down this augmentation of wells, the wells don't all have to come on at the same time. They don't have, you know, there's going to be a process to that, and I think that's where WSC could really help us, because they have experience in this. They could do, you know, look at the lines themselves that exist in the golf course and feel if the north is really that degraded in its capacity. And so I think that's where we could at least start and get some type of a feedback, but I think that's definitely something I would look at, and then at least it gets us going somewhere and we're doing our due diligence, and I think the cost of it isn't extensive.
So what you're telling me at this point is this, when you saw with the one we have now from WSC, is what you're telling me what they understand we want to do? Is their bid consistent with what you're telling me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think they feel the review process is going to be pretty short, but I think if we wanted to have them come to town hall type meetings, or if we wanted to specify a number of community engagement type events, then that may change. But I think from their recent projection, even if those things changed, I think we would still be with a really good vendor and firm that they're not going to gouge us in any way.
Yeah. Part of that, when you mentioned town halls, I think there's, and Randy alluded to it, and Mr. Suchuk has been here telling us all we have to get together and do this. In 2016, on this same project, we did a series of 6 stakeholder meetings. And you can, in various places, and I have them, even see the minutes of each one of those meetings and what resulted from it. What it did was, in this scenario, if you were to have it sponsored by the county, for example, like it was the last time, one of the requirements I would have it be sponsored and administered by a level at Dave DeFonte, who is the overall head of planning and development in the county of Sacramento. I would want it at that level, and you would need. I've had conversations with him, and we also have a new supervisor that I've had a couple of meetings with as well. But what you would involve there is some of the very same people we had the last time, and that, you know, would obviously be the representatives of the Van Vleck Ranch, the Slough House Groundwater Authority, who didn't exist when we did this last time, the RMA, the CSD, the Country Club, all of those people together, and obviously the developers. So what you come up with out of that is perhaps not totally a solution, but at least you walk away from an understanding where everybody stands.
Yeah.
How we move forward from that point. The only problem, serious problem, and there was some very, very good input out of those meetings that we had, and that one was sponsored by our then supervisor, Roberta McClashen. The only thing was that the developer had and still to this day has not been ready to move forward. I mean, there's still 3 plans that you and Joe Domicelli are going to have to look at that have to be completed, submitted, sent back to us and commented on and go back to the county before, and I'm not sure even now at this point how many technical studies are still outstanding. I know the artifact study isn't done. Okay, all of that has to happen before this thing can go anywhere. So that was the only reason that after that 2016 meeting that nothing ever happened, because the developer has never been ready. We've been doing this since 2014. This is the 11th year now that this application is open. So that may be one alternative. And I think I could help you with that if somebody decides that's the way we want to go. That's up to you guys.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. And I can reach out to WSC and add in those items and have them generate a new cost of service for it so that they're aware.
Yeah. Because whoever you would pick if we were to do something that was in that context, it would be those people would have to be in the meeting.
Right.
I mean, that goes without saying. And whatever you tell them is going to happen there, how many times they have to show up here and how many meetings we want to have is going to be reflected in the cost. So
right.
Okay.
And West Yost was responsive, but they didn't have the manpower to engage us in such a short timeline. And so we do have a few other contacts, but I think, you know, with WSC being the most responsive, and in the current situation.
Yeah, plus they have a Folsom office.
Yeah.
They have a staff in Folsom.
Yeah, so they've been really good to work with, and also they were one of the ones who provided us a contact for the bathymetric surveys. They don't do them themselves, but they provided the firm that they use, and that's one of the quotes that we'll be receiving.
Yeah,
so.
Great.
So what do you need to hire these people and get going? Do we move this to the board for approval, or we just
this
say
$4,000.
Go for it?
I think it's in our approval, but I think we move it to the board as a conversation. We add the other items in for just a a more accurate depiction, so everyone's kind of aware, because that cost may change based off those meetings, because most of that then is going to be done in person, where a lot of this was probably going to be done virtual, and then through conversation with me, this will include a few more. So I'm assuming the cost is going to go up a little. But
so if it goes up to 15,000, we're reviewing a $500,000 study for 15,000 bucks. I mean, I can live with that.
Yeah, I think it's much more community engagement.
So this will finalize that at the board meeting, and you'll send them a contract.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll reach out here to add in the other items and get that rolling. But yes, that would be the.
And like I said, I spent a lot of time. I talked to those guys, because and they tried desperately to talk to Michael. And I was impressed with the people that I talked to, and I was impressed specifically with their website. I mean, they're young and they're good. Okay.
Mr. Merchant, I do have a public comment on this topic.
Okay.
Jim,
yes, sir.
Farrell. Okay.
Hi, how you doing? Good conversation here. I'm still a little bit uncertain on, you know, how some of this whole thing goes forward. And I'm mostly thinking from the standpoint of, you know, we have to have some sort of quote-unquote peer review when we do the water, what is it called, the water supply assessment letter. So it says something has to happen at that point. Then we have this whole issue as the community has been reacting to this, what's called a plan, and it's not an integrated water plan. It's an integrated water study. And people in the community have been saying, hey, you know, I have all these questions, I have these issues and concerns, and I want peer review, and that, it's, you know, you've had all kinds of letters with that. I actually think the moratorium petition calls for peer review. And so I'm questioning, how does that work? You know, how is this going to fit together with what you're doing here? You don't want to pay for 14 different peer reviews. And you probably want to have the same peer review work for you on your assessment report as you do for this study. And you know what is the plan for getting back to the community so that these people who've got questions or concerns or disagreements with the study, that somehow we say, okay, we hear you, this is the decision the board's making about that issue. And you know, and who's going to do that? Like that's really kind of my. I'm still a little uncertain how that all's fitting together in your guys.
Back up to the first question you had about the water supply assessment, because we can kind of take that one off the table. We have a letter from the county stipulating that they will not ask for a water supply assessment. Water code requires them to ask us to provide one, and they will not do that until a developer's study is complete and ready to move through the process. The last step that we do, based on all of these things that Eric is trying to put together here, is give them back a report that says we got zero water, we got 50% water, we got 100% water, we can support 1,000 houses, we can support 20 houses. That's what that report will do.
And just guessing, John, just guessing, that's what, probably a couple of years away from now at that, best?
It's out of our control.
It's really whenever
the developer has completed all of those steps and it is ready to move to scoping and to CPAC, and then, which are two elements of this that are both public processes.
But is it before the EIR?
No. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Right. That's the scoping is what will give you the parameters. The county will come to the scoping meeting and they will gather information then that they will use to set the requirements for the EIR, and then it will move probably to an outside source, not the county, and they will do it. And it may take a year, it may take 2 years. There will be a review of that process when it's done, usually 90 days. When an extension, it can go to 120. But none of that starts, okay, until the developer's application is 100% complete.
I understand that. So really, then I guess the heart of my question is, how do we deal with this community issue, and the kind of the expectation there's going to be some sort of a peer review in order to answer the community questions?
Just my opinion, and feel free to participate, is that once we understand completely what our process is going to be, we will tell the community what the process is going to be. One of the things that is advantageous to doing a stakeholder type of a meeting is it's a public meeting. People can sit there and watch it. The last time it was done, there were some very senior people at the planning department that led the meeting. Surinder Singh was an old-time planner down there, one of the best ones they ever had. And it was really systematic and really productive. And like I said, I will dredge them up or I will give you links to see what the results of those were. That, in my mind, is the kind of thing that satisfies Mr. Suchak's requirements, satisfies mine. I'm still looking for a plan.
Right.
I'm looking for something that we can act on and that we can cost, and then they can turn around and segregate those costs and identify what belongs to us and what belongs to the developer.
Right, exactly.
So I think this is probably one of the better ways to go. It may not be the way we go.
What you have in mind would satisfy, I believe it was the moratorium, which I know you were involved with in some ways, does call for a peer review in that letter, doesn't it?
Yeah, it says is we don't move forward until we are completely satisfied. And I would hope that after Eric designs a plan and we run this past all of the contributing entities, that we're at that point. At that point, we're going to be ready to tell the county when they ask us we have.
Just want to compliment you, Eric. You are a huge addition to this process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I honestly think it's not. So for most people, I think when they hear this type of stuff, they're thinking like months. And in my mind, I'm thinking like years. Bigger entities, things even move even slower. But from what I understand, even in what you're talking about, the submittal process, most of that isn't even really even near completion for a lot of the areas that were originally projected to be developed.
And yeah, so there are 8 villages and 39 acres of property next door, all of which that require water, sewer, and drainage studies. And Randy would know better than I would know. When you drop these on Joe Domicelli's desk, okay, and you go through the process of reviewing them through this committee or however we're going to go through it, this is not something that's going to happen overnight. And I don't know at this point that those studies even exist. You would have to ask Mike Robertson where he is with all of this stuff, because I don't know that they've even started them. There was one drainage plan that was a mess that is sitting down at the county now that we at Coastland, our old engineer, commented on, and that thing is not going anywhere. So I don't know how long it will be before they are ready to step forward. We just go at the best speed we can go and hope to be ready when we're asked. That's all we can do. Agree?
Yeah. Go ahead, Doug.
So a couple of things. So for the last part, you stated that we don't know when that application will be ready, and if we can't do our work before that application is ready, shame on us, right?
Well, no, Tom. We don't know. We're at this point now going to go at an efficient speed, hopefully. But no, I can't. We, like I said, we don't have any control. It could be another 2 years.
Right.
I don't know.
Could be 2, could be 4, could be
and the 6. Longer it lingers, the more, as has happened this time. We went through with these folks just prior to their purchase of the property in 2010.
Yeah.
And then in 2016 with a water supply assessment.
So let's go as fast as we can.
We're dealing with 2 studies that were wrong and were obsolete. Okay? And all of this has occurred in this this period where, in most cases at the county, they have a policy: if you don't move for 2 years, you're out, and you resubmit. This policy has, this project has lingered down there without progress.
So let's not worry about that side. Let's worry about our side.
Well, we're going to worry about our side.
Good.
And don't ask me today when we're going to be finished, because I'm not sure what the process is yet.
Well, let's just get started and let's go.
Well, we that's what we're talking about doing.
Okay, and then the second comment, and I appreciate you guys recognizing what I'm asking for, but then you give an answer that doesn't satisfy what I'm asking for, because you might want this bigger entity that includes the county and Ochi, OCW, or whatever they are, and
Omichomi Hartnell right, Water District,
and everybody else. But I think we as Rancho Murrieta need just our little ad hoc water committee, and it's not, I wouldn't even include the developers. I would include CSD, I would include the Country Club, and I would include RMA. And I can speak for the Country Club. Country Club has enough problems of our own. We don't want to go to a county-wide forum to figure stuff out. We want to help CSD from the Country Club. Okay? And so it's just CSD and RMA and the Country Club working together to manage our little piece of the water problems. And then if CSD wants a bigger entity with the county, more power to you. But that doesn't, inviting the Country Club and RMA to that bigger forum that is run by somebody else at the county level, that does not meet what I'm asking for. Okay? So I'm asking for just CSD, the Country Club, and RMA to get together and solve our problems. Okay? So that's what I'm asking for. I wanted to make sure you're clear in what I'm asking for is just those three entities.
I'm clear in what you're asking for, yes.
Okay.
Tom, why not the developers? The developers have got a big say in everything we're talking about here.
So if you want to invite the developers that are already approved and have their water rights already granted, Riverview and Bob, I think they would be.
This situation, this groundwater recharging, if you don't have the developers there, how do you, I guess.
Well, but what do you need the developers for?
Drainage basins.
What do you need the developers for? He has augmentation fees. He can spend the money however he wants to spend it.
I get it.
Right? We should control it. We as the district should control it. We should tell the developers what we're going to do. Right?
Would you want the owner of the Country Club there? The owner, not the lessee.
That's a good question.
That's a good question. And let me. Okay. I'm meeting with Carol in a week or she's coming back from Texas. I'm meeting with her in the middle of the month, and I'll talk to her about it.
Okay.
Okay. And I can get back to you. I don't know the right now. Right now, the people who care about water are the lessees, okay, at the Country Club.
Right.
So asking for the lessees.
That lease is on its last leg.
The what?
Lease is on its last leg.
Well.
So, yeah, it's a good question.
It's a good question.
Before you, I know you...
Last question on this item. And then I got run. I hung in way longer than I should have. Peer/technical review. So the idea of a peer review has come up several times this morning. As I recall during the board meeting, your definition of a peer review is a staff review.
So I'd like to change that, because after doing a little research, it can mean either or, meaning peer, community, technical. They can all be somewhat interchangeable. Typically, my experience was limited, and that was how it was used at the agency that I was at. But a peer review is a technical review, so they can be used interchangeable, and that's really comes down to more the committee and board direction. I like the idea of having a stakeholders type open meeting so that we can help answer some of these questions, and also it'll help the firm give a better plan and understand what's going on in the area. But there isn't, it doesn't have to be a multi-pronged one. I think this just kind of came up because that conversation and my own misunderstanding.
I mean, I know your one more comment to you, Randy, is that I think that a review with all of these entities involved and joined by the company we're going to ask to do this really gives us, at the end of it, an idea, first of all, of what the plan looks like. What is the plan? I mean, we're talking about groundwater, we're talking about Clements, you're talking about all these things. Well, out of that discussion, which involves all of those entities and maybe even to some degree involves the water board, when you talk about Clementia, I think that's probably the best way to go. So we don't have to decide that today, but
the more people, well, I'm torn. The more people you get involved, the more the slower it goes. But
I don't think you're talking about more than six.
Here's my thought when you're talking about we don't have a plan. I don't know how you could ever have a plan unless you're stocked in and you know that your wells are going to work. What's going to come out of this study, which was rightly said, it's a study. Here's how much we lack in water. And we're never going to see a plan that says, and you can get it by doing this and this or this. It's going to be up to us to figure out what all the possibilities are, what the costs of those possibilities are, and which way we're eventually going to go. But that's post-water study stuff. That's not in the scope of what this study was meant to be.
The trick is to have something ready when a water supply assessment shows up on your doorstep and you have to commit to the amount of water you're going to provide.
I think Eric is absolutely on the right track where he's headed down here, and to hear today that there's money available in funding for this, outstanding, just outstanding. I think we're headed in the right direction, and if we hit a roadblock there and we have to head off in another direction, you know, time will tell. But at least we're making, I see us making progress, and I'm encouraged.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
The preliminary design costs for the village.
So that's it's about $82,000. So it's $81,000 and some change. And that is for the preliminary design. The cost of each associated valve for a PRV, the PRVs are around $100. And we would have them installed. So they would be
part of that
amortization.
That was what I thought when I was watching the meeting down there. That, number one, when we're done, everybody should have one.
Exactly.
And number two, ideally, they should all be the same one.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, so, and if they're $100 a piece,
we currently,
Richard has a comment, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, and we currently have, like, a rebate program, but the rebate itself basically covers only the cost of the valve. And so I think Mimi was doing some research to see if she could adjust that rebate. That way it could also include the cost of labor to put it in, because there is usually they have to be sweat in.
The only other comment I have that we'll do another place in another time is I have pressure valves on every piece of irrigation that I own, and I don't know of anybody that I know in this community that doesn't have really high water pressure. I mean, unless you get in the peripheries, you get up around underneath the tank over there, everybody's got a pressure valve over there. I mean, it'll blow you away.
Yeah, so I can explain that, because if you look at the actual city, community, it goes It goes east to west, and east is in higher elevation. Well, every undulation is a change in pressure. So if you're at a low point, if you're in the villages or even out at the horse ranch arena, the pressure is going to be pretty high because most of the water is stored on the east at a very high elevation.
Yeah.
And so the water delivered through the system does have a high pressure, but the homes itself usually would protect that with having a PRV. It doesn't really impact our services to have high pressure, but it definitely does impact a homeowner.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. when all your emitters start blowing.
Yeah, and that may be something that we need to look at with the county and see if there's already a standard and a spec that we've specced and have it as a requirement. Because if it's part of our requirement, then planning will hold that up in their end.
And even if it's not, we can get the county's cooperation on that. I'm reasonably sure that can happen.
It should be there, honestly, because everything that's built and developed should have it. And usually that's what happens in most cities is because it's all inter-controlled, then they set that.
Right. Richard, did you have a...
Yeah. By the way, my house has bad water pressure.
Huh? So does mine. I mean,
I thought you said you had good water.
No. I've got low pressure valves everywhere, including on my own irrigation, the 30 psi.
We're saying it's low.
Oh, yours is low?
Low.
Oh, congratulations! You're a lucky guy. Yes, sir.
My concern question is about pressure relief valves. It's my understanding that when those are installed, it requires expansion tanks being installed to protect the water tanks?
No, so they would be on the homeowner's property, and all they are is basically a valve that's about, maybe three or four inches, and it's just a thread-in, thread-out diaphragm. There's nothing else that's required.
But my understanding is that creates a closed system for the home, and because of the water tank, it requires an expansion tank. So
for the hot water heater, the expansion tanks, those are a requirement, I think, by permitting basically everywhere anymore. And I don't think the PRV either adds or changes that. Basically, if you get a new one installed, you have to have it. And what you can do to avoid that is if you also have just the tankless hot water system, then I think you can avoid that. But with the PRV, you don't necessarily... It doesn't immediately make you get a tank for your hot water heater. What it'll do is when you have one replaced, that's part of the new permit. You have to have it.
Okay. I can almost guarantee you few, if anybody, in the village has expansion tanks.
So. Yeah, they wouldn't need them right away, and it's part of the permitting process. Like if you have a plumber come and do it, if you do it on your own, the tanks still don't have them. I lived in Roseville. Roseville has the same exact, they have PRVs on the setup, but we didn't have an expansion tank. But when you have a plumber come and replace your hot water heater with a tank, they will put an expansion in because it's part of the permitting just to ensure, I think, that it doesn't flood in your home.
Okay. Yeah, my understanding, there's some kind of risk if you don't have that.
Yeah, I think the risk is just kind of like having either like a washing machine without having a tub underneath it to collect the water should it rupture.
Okay.
But I don't think it's borne by the PRV itself. That tank will hold up to the amount of pressure we deliver. It's about 90 PSI is what I've heard is kind of the highest in our system. Okay. The hot water tank should hold up to well over that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
So do we have this cost. Do we have to now take this to the board for approval? We do, right? Yes, this is...
I think it's over our limit, but it's already been approved they approved it for $100,000.
Yeah, okay.
And so this came up just because it was a request to put it on here as information so that because we'd been discussing whether the PRV was in there.
You good with that?
And I think we took it to a vote last month with this quote.
Okay.
For exactly the
$80,000. Yeah, Joe's quote.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We're cool.
One other thing.
Well, I have the microphone. What happened to item G on the agenda? The seepage report? Skipped over that?
We can.
Well, and he and I have talked about it, but one of the things that Atkins called for in Chapter 7 was one is a weather station and the other is the seepage report. And Eric says we have one. And I'm not really as concerned with seepage. I think we have a good handle now based on the bathymetrics we do to measure reservoir levels and what production is. That's a very good number that comes out of his water plant, plus the thing we talked about yesterday where they're discharging to clean the filters and all that other stuff. We can now measure our own seepage and evaporation. I don't know that we can measure them individually, but we have a collective number now.
That report.
Right? That okay. At least I'm comfortable with, okay. if Eric is.
Yeah.
Where is that on here? Just the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's up on the screen up here right now.
Okay. I did have some questions about that.
Yeah, those I do too. I haven't had time to look at those. But when we did that analysis that I showed you,
yeah,
where we measured over the 5-month period from the end of pumping to the, I'm sorry, from the beginning of pumping, no, the other way around, from May to November,
yeah,
when we calculated the production numbers, and we calculated the lake level reduction, we saw that there was a lot more reduction in the lakes than there was going through the water plant,
right,
which means that we lost that water. It just didn't go through our system.
And this report says that maybe, but I haven't, like I said, I
got it yesterday. I haven't
okay.
looked at
it. Well, I did have a lot of questions about it, so.
Yeah.
It's pretty complicated.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I know it's complicated. Can you explain it?
Can I ask my questions?
Yeah.
Does the first three columns and the next three columns are pretty much the same? I assume one's Calero and one's...
Come and show us, Richard. There's a lot of little
this
numbers.
This is reservoir gain or loss, volume of loss of gain, and then the same three columns over here.
Yes.
One is Calero, one is...
Yes. Chesbrough.
Okay. And what is this unit, reservoir gain or loss, 3.92? Is that
feet.
Feet?
Yep. So the reason the table is not fine-tuned is because between the time of the board meeting and the time of producing this, because of the public require, it was quickly put together from a lot of other tables, but I'll clean it up and have it make more sense. But most of that is done in feet, and then most of the others are done in million gallons. Exactly, that's the elevation difference. So it's either, no.
No, and is the county, Eric, is the we've gone back and forth, and of late it is now acre feet down there when you report on your individual permits. Is there any reason we can't report in acre feet? Millions of gallons. I got to go to the computer to use a calculator.
Yeah, so I can. It is actually on there. They're just hidden cells.
All right.
The spreadsheet is actually...
That's way, millions of gallons.
Way wider than that. I reported it in millions of gallons because it matches up to what the water treatment plant produces and uses.
Yeah, but we
can easily
Travis
do acre feet.
Travis has had that number. His tables down there have acre feet,
yeah,
as well.
You can also report in million gallons. It's up to you how you report in your diversions now. It'll automatically change it and calculate it, but I can definitely just put it in acre feet.
Okay.
And then will you bring this back to the improvements in February or to the board?
Yeah, this is probably going to be something that we see more often. The reason you see the dates or the months actually going below it is that would have been 2023 data if I had the time to put it all in there. Like you said, it's very extensive. There's under drains, multiple ones under each reservoir, and so those are all summations of each reservoir's under drain. So there's a lot going on in that table, and we'll have more time to talk about it and spread it out. Did you also have a question about the table, or were you just, is that good?
Yeah, okay. Jim, that probably is a better idea to, because I haven't, like I said, I haven't even looked at it. The last item real quick, because we're in these guys' territory now. The CIP projects, before we have our meetings, we're going to combine what's in the reserve study and what we have in the CIP if there are any differences, so we have a composite list of everything that we're looking at, right?
Correct.
That's basically what that's about.
Yeah.
And Mr. Merchant, we do need to talk about item M, because we want to take this SCADA CIP to the board in January for
Yeah, if you have the results, I mean, we've...
They're right. They're on the screen and they're...
Okay. Then yeah, we'll recommend that we take that to the board.
Thank you.
I mean, we've been over that enough. Anything else? Because I'm going to adjourn.
Okay, so then I'm going to table L, the steel pipe from Calera Reservoir, and I'm also going to table O, district administration office beautification for next month.
Yeah, the only thing about the steel pipe is all I wanted to know is based on what we found below Clementia. And Travis has said he thinks the pipe's okay. There's 2 miles of pipe there, and if we lose part of that in the pumping season, we are screwed.
So there are a few items of concern that I have. The pipe is buried and doesn't have electrical rectifiers that would protect it, and usually in a situation in that buried soil, the soil here is typically aggressive. So we can look at that. And then there's also, if the committee moves for the board to direct me, what we could do is they insert what's called a pig. It's a cleaning device, but they also have ones that are ultrasonic with radar. And as they slide through the pipe, they image the pipe as it goes along, and they give you kind of an age assessment.
That's exactly what I was hoping we would do.
That's what I thought as well. I just wanted to make sure. So I'll move forward and see some agencies, and then also there may be some cost associated to it because you have to be able to insert and remove it. So you have to have one spot that you can get it in and one spot you can get it out other than the pump. So there may be some stuff there.
Okay.
So then this will come back to this committee in February, and then shall we table the district administration office beautification?
Yeah, table that to next month.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And whatever we do out there, we'll want to do in the springtime anyway.
Okay.
Meeting is adjourned.
So no director comment, no pub?
Oh, are there public?
Yeah, public comments, but I don't have any so far.
Okay. And I don't have any being the lone director, so we're done.
Meeting is adjourned at 10:02.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.
Thank you. That was productive.